Good morning. My name is Alex Sterling Langley, and I'm the Director of Research at Ofsted & Associates. Today I'd like to tell you about the impact of a customized educational program that was developed as part of the Worksite Influenza Vaccination Study, also called the WIVS study. For disclosure purposes, I need to tell you that I am an employee of an independent research firm called Ofsted & Associates, and Sanofi Pasteur provided financial support and vaccine for this study. I'd like to acknowledge multiple organizations that are listed here that were essential for the successful completion of this study. I'd also like to acknowledge the members of the WIVS research team. Dr. Harry Wetzler is Ofsted's medical director, and he'll be presenting additional findings from the study during the occupational health poster session at 10:30 today. The study findings were also published online 3 weeks ago in the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine. For background purposes, it's important to know that every year in this country, influenza affects millions of Americans and takes an incredible toll on the economy. Among working adults, many lose two or more days of work due to influenza, and the majority of employees are still impaired when they return to work. Despite ACIP's 2010 recommendation for universal influenza vaccination, rates among many groups have stayed the same or gone down in recent years. And there's many healthcare providers that still do not actively recommend vaccination. The goals of this study were first to increase influenza vaccination rates by designing and implementing customized evidence-based interventions aimed at increasing employee knowledge about the importance of influenza and vaccination, addressing concerns and misconceptions about these topics, and reducing barriers to vaccination. A second goal was to measure the impact of these interventions on the various factors that are listed here. So who was involved in this study? It included industrial employees from three factories at a large U.S. self-insured manufacturing corporation. Sites A and B implemented study interventions, and Site C served as a control. Over 13,000 covered employees and dependents were included in claims data analysis, and among employees, most were male and the average age was 45. In addition, a baseline survey was completed at sites A and B in 2010 to guide intervention design, and a follow-up survey was completed at all three sites in 2011. These are some of the results from the baseline survey. These results indicated that influenza had a significant impact on employees at sites A and B during the previous season. Nearly half had influenza-like illness, and the majority of those employees came to work sick. Over a quarter missed work due to having ILI themselves, and 14 to 19% also missed work due to caring for others with influenza-like illness. Approximately 30% of employees or dependents required medical care, and employees at each factory lost over $600,000 each year due to absenteeism and out-of-pocket costs. From the baseline survey, we also learned that misconceptions about influenza and vaccination were common, and there were multiple barriers to vaccination, including it was inconvenient, expensive, and painful. Employees preferred receiving health advice from healthcare providers and families, and notably 69% also trusted worksite clinic staff. Most employees also preferred to learn about health topics at work by reading written materials or speaking privately with a healthcare provider. We used the information that we learned from this baseline survey to develop customized evidence-based interventions. And these interventions included management briefings highlighting data from the published literature and the baseline survey to gain leadership support, training for health coaches, clinic staff, and factory artists to ensure their understanding of these topics and enlist their support engaging other employees in the worksite vaccination program, various written materials including flyers, home mailers, newsletters, posters, and cartoons to convey information about influenza and vaccination to employees and address their misconceptions and concerns, reaching out to local physicians who saw large numbers of factory employees to sign a letter encouraging universal vaccination, and negotiations with the mass vaccinator to reduce barriers. These next few slides show examples of some of the customized educational materials that were deployed at the intervention sites. Shown here are two posters emphasizing survey findings. These are examples of newsletter content that, again, was based on survey data and also was developed in collaboration with factory leaders to reflect the interest and the local culture of the employees. And these are cartoons that one factory artist created following a training session with our research team and a debrief about baseline survey findings. After the interventions had been designed and deployed, we evaluated their effects on several factors. For the purposes of today's presentation, I'd like to tell you about their impact on employee knowledge, beliefs, and vaccine uptake. Given that many of us here today are strong advocates of education and often use it to try and improve health literacy, I'd like to start by telling you about the impact of these interventions on knowledge. These are the results of the knowledge tests on the baseline survey, which is shown in blue, and the follow-up survey, which is shown in green, at the intervention sites. As you can see, even customized education had little impact on knowledge. And these results were particularly surprising for our research team, given the fact that 46% of respondents on the follow-up survey said that information they received from their employer helped them make a decision about vaccination. So knowledge didn't change, but what about beliefs? Again, there was not much difference in the reasons employees chose not to get vaccinated between baseline and follow-up at the two intervention sites. Concerns about vaccine safety and effectiveness and the belief that healthy adults don't need to be vaccinated were still the main reasons for not receiving vaccine, followed by a dislike of needles and nasal spray. Even 14% of respondents on the follow-up survey thought that their doctor didn't recommend vaccination for them, despite interventions specifically aimed at changing this perception. Reasons for accepting vaccine also stayed largely the same. Primary reasons for getting vaccinated were economic, such as it was free, it was convenient, and could prevent absenteeism. Health-related concerns, such as fear of catching or transmitting influenza, were secondary reasons for getting vaccinated. Furthermore, not even half of employees said that they got vaccinated because of doctor recommendation on either survey. So what impact did this have on vaccination? At the end of the day, vaccination increased at both intervention sites. Although the increase at site A was statistically significant, we had intended to double the vaccination rate, and yet it only went up by about 85 employees. This was due in part to short staffing by the mass vaccinator, which led to long lines on the first day of the vaccination event, and many employees end up exiting those lines. At Site B, free vaccine was offered to both employees and their families at four employer-sponsored events, including a community health fair and a Halloween event. And worksite clinic staff actively offered vaccine to every employee that visited the clinic during the time of this study. Worksite clinic staff at factory or at Site B also held four additional events at the factory for employees to get vaccinated. At Site C, vaccination ended up going down with the standard vaccination program. This reflected national trends and suggests that the interventions at Sites A and B may have prevented backslide. Once the data was in, we did logistic regression analysis to identify the factors that contributed to vaccine uptake. Results confirmed the most important factor was convenient access to free vaccine. Receipt of information about vaccination from the employer was significant and specifically pertained to information about free vaccine, convenience or availability at work, and employment benefits or risks. In this case, education was important because it served as a cue to action. In addition, even though overall knowledge and beliefs didn't change, higher individual knowledge scores were associated with vaccine uptake. Many of the interventions that were implemented during this study work to increase vaccination and should be considered for future programs. Two of the most striking that I'd like to tell you about today were ensuring free, convenient access to vaccine at the workplace and engaging families. So how important was worksite vaccination? Both survey and claims data confirm that over 90% of vaccinated employees at sites A and B received vaccine either at the workplace or through an employer-sponsored event. Claims data revealed the same was also true for 70% of vaccinated dependents at Site B, which engaged families. Among all vaccinated employees at all sites, 50% said they would not have received vaccine had it not been available free at work. These data clearly demonstrate the importance of worksite vaccination for reaching this population. And what about the impact of engaging families? Claims data revealed that there was a very strong association between employee and family vaccination status. At Site B, if employees were vaccinated, nearly all spouses were vaccinated, whereas if employees were not vaccinated, only 10% of spouses were vaccinated. Similar relationships were found between employees and their children, and even at sites A and C, yet to a lesser extent. These results indicate that engaging families significantly increased participation in the worksite vaccination program. So in conclusion, I'd like to leave you with some key findings and recommendations for how employers could improve their own worksite vaccination programs, and I think you'll see how this could relate to other health programs as well. First, bring vaccine to the people where they are. Many of the employees in this study had no encounters with the healthcare system during the influenza season. And so offering vaccine at the work site was critical for reaching them. Next, eliminate perceived barriers by making vaccine extremely convenient and available at no cost to employees. Also, engage both employees and families by offering employer-sponsored vaccination events where entire households can get vaccinated and community immunity or herd immunity can actually be achieved. In addition, rather than using education as a means to change knowledge or strongly held beliefs, use it as a cue to action and emphasize the economic benefits of vaccination, as these were the primary reasons that employees chose to get vaccinated. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time and attention and turn it over to the question and answer session.
If I could ask the presenters to come on up, and we have two extra chairs just so we have the full number of seats for the panel. Okay, again, I'm Laura Linnan. For anybody that's been coming in, we've had an excellent panel, so I want to ask everyone to stand up for a minute, get a little physical activity, give another round of applause while we're getting set up. Stretch. Good. You're going to be sitting all day, so you're going to like this. Yeah, it'll be good, I promise. So we now have plenty of time for questions. Thank you, panelists, for doing a great job. And who's first? Okay.
I'd like to ask the gentleman from Ohio Northern University, how did you engage people with disabilities or customize the program?
The question was, how did we engage employees with disabilities into our wellness program? We have a number of points on our point system that you can accumulate without a lot of physical wellness. For example, if they attend a seminar on health and wellness, and we hold one monthly on campus, they can get 5 points for that. We try to make it so that even if the employee was physically handicapped and could not exercise, they could still get points. Or if someone had pretty poor blood work, they could still make strides to improve their health through other measures. So, hope that answers your question. If we utilize
BMI.
Oh, yes. So the question was, do we utilize BMI as one of our screenings? Yes, we do that. We offer weight loss services on campus. It would be great, again, if I had a nutritionist or a dietitian that I could refer that to as well. But I do have physical therapy, and I do have exercise physiology, so those people can get some help. And as they make, they get points for actively trying, and they get points for reaching goals.
Thanks.
Next.
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. Yes, we do. I didn't show a complete list of points, but we do. The question was, do we offer incentive for using mental health as well? And yes, we do. We again, many of our seminars are focused around decreasing stress. For example, in the spring, we're bringing in a Buddhist monk, and he's going to do a workshop for our employees as well, and that will be worth the credit. So.
How many employees do you have?
How do points accumulate was the question. We start with a clean slate every January. So this year they had to accumulate 25 points. Next year we'll probably tweak that up a little bit. Again, we wanted to go slow and kind of underhand soft pitch the first couple of years to the employees to get them excited about it and utilizing the system.
Mm-hmm. So, how many employees?
We have around 450 employees that represent 900 covered lives. So of those 900 covered lives, about two-thirds are adults and about a third are children.
Thank you very much. Hey, yes.
This question is for the Dean
Center for Bio. We need this. I'm not sure we do.
Great.
Over here, and then next, over here.
Yeah. Question is, how do we deal with cheaters? We fire and expel them. Now, that's a good question. We don't really have a good system to address that. We've taken some things at face value. A lot of the points have to come from if it's a health related, or excuse me, if it's a medical related point, it's got to come from a provider. But as far as, you know, doing a 5K or a half marathon, we just take their word for it. Mm-hmm.
So I work with a lot of nuclear groups, and that's always the question I get, how do I make sure that the employees are actually telling the truth and not telling the truth?
Yeah.
You know, the numbers a little bit. And I've had one group who would say, I put light for the person, and not necessarily their friend. It could be, you know, they care about someone else that has to sign off that they've actually completed something, some sort of an event or patient or they've read something. So they just have a little check and balance that we can always kind of get people to kind of up the numbers a little bit. But that's one step to try to avoid it.
Being a research scientist, I think with a lot of the studies that we design, there's a survey component. And we don't take anything at face value anymore, so I think the more data that you can have to corroborate the findings, I think that's why we like to partner survey data with claims data to just, you know, a lot of times we've done other studies where what leadership thinks is going on or what they say is going on is very different from what the constituents see, and so the surveys, the interviews, and the hard data, whether it be electronic medical records or claims data, is, I think, important to have multiple touch points.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yes?
No, we never share individual data with employers. We only show aggregate reports, and we, as a Kaiser Permanente organization, we have a rule of 30 or more. So if you have 30 or less employees that have participated in any given campaign or a tear gap analysis, we wouldn't be able to show you that aggregate data so that we can mask outliers if we have more than 30. And for the weighted nation, yes, we have several employees we've worked with or employers we work with that have actually done screening of weight of the nation, and we have placed a health coach on site to do after each. So weight of the nation is a four-part series about obesity in America, and Kaiser Permanente was a partner in putting that together. And what we would do is have a health coach on site to air the first hour, do a question and answer, and then maybe a few weeks later do the second hour, and so on, so forth. But it's been very successful, and it's really sparked a lot of wonderful information and discussion around obesity and what people can do on an individual level and in a familial level to make changes in behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it was a self-insured manufacturing corporation, and so the vaccine was provided at no cost to employees.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yes.
Program doing a pre-test using body fat calculations and post-test. and hopefully being able to see a little bit more change, and having the conversation at that level with an employee, I think would have a bigger impact. We're talking about body fat change as opposed to body composition. Because body composition, or BMI, is only focused on height and weight comparison.
Quick additional, do you want to add, or you okay?
I think that's good. BMI is so easy to calculate, but one thing that we have started doing as well is looking at percent body fat. We have some bioimpedance devices that can quickly measure that as a screening, and we also have some more intense devices in the exercise physiology lab that will measure a water weight, that sort of thing.
So this session is done at 10. We have time for one more question. Just one, quick.
Well, I just wondered if maybe Kaiser or ONU speaker could talk about outcome measures other than process measures.
Outcome measures?
I don't know whether you're really impacting the health of the population.
So we'll finish this, and then we'll thank our presenters, and you can come up individually. I'm sure they'll stick around.
I kind of focused on screenings just for time, but we are also tracking outcomes through the disease state management component of the program. So as people get fed into the system, we're looking at how well we're bringing them to their goals and keeping them there. And from that, we're trying to extrapolate some sort of cost estimate modeling for money that we're saving for treating people efficiently.
Thanks for a great session, great questions, and great job, panelists. Enjoy the conference.